treat behind locked doors? Like, what do you think about this, Andre?
With regard to Pickering, it's a really challenging situation because on one hand, I really am a firm believer in open and transparent democracy and freedom of speech. But on the other hand, I want a city council to be able to get work done. And it's clear that the situation in Pickering has gotten out of hand.
What's the future here? If politicians are afraid to meet in person, whether that concern stems from accountability or personal safety, what does this new online future look like? Like, is everything great now? What are things like in Pickering?
There was actually another meeting that went completely off the rails.
Oh yeah, what happened?
So at this meeting that started off as a fairly innocuous discussion about climate change in the city of Pickering.
Where is this meeting happening?
So this was a Zoom meeting that was taking place. And what happened was some bad actors had infiltrated it. Shortly after the meeting started, someone was conducting a lewd act that overtook the screen.
I'm sorry, Andre, there was a lewd act on screen? What was this lewd act?
There was someone who was spread eagle and masturbating on the screen.
Spread eagle. Okay.
It happened very quickly. I saw a very frazzled City of Pickering employee trying to kick people out of the meeting. And then people started uttering racial slurs loudly and over again. Needless to say, the meeting was shut down very quickly, but it is having an impact on how things are functioning at the city of Pickering.
So people joined the Zoom call from the quote-unquote safety of their own home, but it's actually not any safer. It's worse because they didn't set up the Zoom call correctly, and people could show whatever they wanted on their cameras. Someone masturbating, swastikas, people's microphones were also live, and they were shouting racial slurs. And so now there's a separate police investigation into this incident. You know, Andre, it sounds like they've tried having things in person. It doesn't work. There are disruptions. It sounds like they've tried moving things online. That's not working either. I don't know how many other options the mayor has left available to him. So, you know, what is the mayor hoping for next?
Well, the mayor was really hoping for Bill 241 to pass through.
What's Bill 241?
Bill 241 was put forward by the Doug Ford Conservatives in December of last year that would essentially allow city councils to vote to remove a councillor who is in serious contravention of the code of conduct.
That sounds pretty drastic. That almost sounds like an overreach of power.
You know, that was something of concern to me as well, especially if you have a partisan city council. The definition of serious isn't really laid out in the bill. So if you have a partisan city council, this could essentially be used to make dissent go away.
But is this bill happening? What's going on?
Well, that legislation died on the table when Doug Ford called an election in January. But legislation like this has seen support from all three of the major parties in Ontario, which is pretty remarkable given the current political landscape that we're in.
And what is Councillor Robinson thinking?
Lisa says that she's actually planning on running for mayor in the next election.
I've already made the assertion, the hint, that I want to run against the mayor. So if that legislation was to come through, this is a way to knock out his opponent before the end of this term.
And well, thanks to Doug Ford's early election call, as you said, that legislation did not come through. So now Lisa Robinson is in the clear to run for mayor of Pickering on her own platform of tearing down City Hall. I will be really curious to find out if that's something people really want to vote for, though. Andre, I think we're going to give Lisa the final word here.
I really liked it before when I was growing up. And like, you know, when somebody asked you, where do you sit politically? Nobody used to talk about it. My parents wouldn't even tell me. I'd be like, who should I vote for? They're like, oh, I can't talk to you about that.
Yeah.
That's how it was with me growing up, right? And now it's like everybody, like, you know, they can't even be friends now if somebody's a liberal and you're a conservative, or if you're like with the Green Party. Like, it is insane what's going on. They even got so far as to, like, you know, talk about wanting to stop from me from paying, like, you know, for my internet, my phone, my car allowance, like, yeah, everything completely. And being a single mom to, like, not get paid for 9 months, and also to shut down all of my benefits and stuff. Are these like sane people that we're dealing with? Like, I wouldn't even wish that on my worst enemy.
That is your Canada Land episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I can be emailed about what you heard today at jesse@canadaland.com. I'm also posting stuff on Blue Sky if you want to check me out there. Today's episode was reported by Andre Proulx with editorial assistance from Tristan Capicchione, who also presented today's story with Andre. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing by Tristan Capicchione. Today's episode was fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Max Collins is Canada Land's Director of Audio. I'm the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We'll talk about that snowboarding cocaine kingpin. He is still at large. We'll talk about the upcoming election debates. Carney versus Poilievre versus Singh versus May versus Blanchette. It may already be too many candidates up there. So how many more moderators do we need? Mostly, we'll be talking today about how much everybody hates America. Like, not really, but like, yeah, really. They hurt our feelings.
Off. This will not stand, and we will do whatever it takes to stop.
Wait for that. Author, journalist, podcaster, Substacker, scribe of all things Ottawa, Paul Wells. How you doing?
I'm good.
27% of Canadians now view America as an enemy.
Tonight, Donald Trump is officially escalating his trade war, ordering a tariff as high as 25% on all cars made outside of the U.S.
That friendship has been severely damaged.
It just feels like a family being torn apart.
We're insulted, we're mad, we're angry, and that's enough.
Not business as usual. That's the warning from immigration lawyers to Canadians about traveling to the U.S. after a woman from Vancouver was held in U.S. detention for almost 2 weeks.
It just doesn't make any sense to take these risks to go south of the border.
Ottawa has also updated its travel warning for Canadians visiting the United States.
59% of Canadians said they're less likely to visit the U.S. in 2025.
The old relationship we had with the United States is over.
Paul, as if we needed another reason to resent America, Trump now says that he is going ahead with the 25% tariff on all foreign cars, including ours. We're not getting a break there. He also threatened that if Canada works together with the EU to push back, he will punish us all with even more tariffs. So the resulting news coverage that you heard, like, those are not stories about Canadians booing their national anthem. These are stories about a Canadian who feels that she's been kidnapped, actress Jasmine Mooney, by ICE for 2 weeks. It feels like the story's about an enemy, not an ally. CTV News, breakdown of rule of law. McGill professor cancels trips to U.S. amid immigration crackdown. Like, why go to this lawless country anymore? CTV News, here's what experts say when it comes to U.S. border agents looking at your phone. You know, it's getting beyond just like, buy Canadian, I don't feel comfortable going there. It's like, things might happen to you if you go there. Canadian Press, Canada updates travel advisory for the U.S., noting a need to register on long stays. This is what we used to hear about, like, don't go to Burma, you know? I feel like something really fundamental has broken, and I guess that's not a particularly blazing insight. I think a lot of people are feeling it. I'm just wondering how irrevocable it is, because the other thing that we're hearing is just about, we need to put somebody in the prime minister's office who can handle Trump. Headline after headline about handling Trump, which I think suggests that he can be handled, that there is some spectrum, a meaningful spectrum of what one candidate might be able to get from Trump to repair this relationship versus the other, and maybe a suggestion that there is some form of going back to the way things were, which I don't know.
In important ways, the relationship is broken for the rest of our lives, because Trump, he might get some way around term limits and be president indefinitely. If he's not, J.D. Vance is not particularly a less belligerent person than Trump. His wife is heading off to Greenland for a Putin-style little green men operation. That's not promising. It's now understood across the Trump administration that You cannot keep an active role in the administration unless you parrot this 51st state bull. It's gone from being a bad joke to being an influence campaign very quickly. And I've spent a lot of time in places like Poland and Finland, where this would be recognized immediately as hybrid warfare, with the same objectives as an invasion would have, and the sort of softening up exercise that precludes an invasion. I don't anticipate an invasion, but I anticipate that the softening up will never stop, because the effect of it is to wreck Canada as an investment destination. And that's good enough from a certain American perspective. So I believe that if I went to the United States this weekend, I would be perfectly safe. But I won't be going back to the United States for the foreseeable future. And to me, that's like an amputation. I grew up on the border. I used to go to the record store in Port Huron, Michigan, because they had better jazz records than the one in Sarnia, you know? And I deeply love the American cultural influences that have helped me become the person I am. But I think the incoming American ambassador, Pete Hoekstra, should be put on notice that his presence on Canadian soil is dependent on his recognizing Canada as a legitimate state, and that on the day that he starts talking 51st state, he'll be heading home along with the rest of the embassy staff.
Sending an ambassador home from any country, let alone our biggest ally.
I'm as tired of this slogan as everyone else, but it's elbows up, you know, because if it's not, we're in big trouble.
There is a suggestion that that slogan carries with it, that like, okay, let's defend. And it's what Harper said. Let's take any amount of punishment or pain economically. We are defending our very sovereignty. The one thing that is interesting about elbows up, as our producer James pointed out, is I don't know much about hockey. You're not supposed to do that. It's not a clean hit, right? Yeah, Canadians encouraging each other to fight dirty. But anyhow, the suggestion of it is that there is a fight to be had, and that's not necessarily up to us, right?
Yeah.
Back to that suggestion that what are we talking about here? We're not talking about an invasion. We're talking about a trade negotiation.
Yeah.
And we want the candidate. We want the prime minister who's going to get the most for us. That might be predetermined by Trump. Like, it's possible that he is bringing that drawbridge up and he's putting a moat around things. It seems strange to me to frame this entire election around who's going to do the best in that negotiation when that might be over in a week or a month.
Yeah.
And the actual job of the new prime minister might be figuring what the hell happens to Canada on those new terms.
Yeah. The likeliest future is a sort of cheat and retreat stance by the U.S. administration, threats of tariffs followed by withdrawals or partial implementations or delays, followed by more threats of tariffs, which is a bad landlord strategy. It's a way of shattering the tenant's mental composure so that you can get them on the street and upgrade the building.
We're going to get rent evicted in Canada.
Yeah. I wrote about some of his adventures as a landlord. At first, because I thought it was a sturdy metaphor, but now I think it's like, it's a one-to-one. It is actually the plan.
It's his management guidebook. Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is it. So yeah, who will Trump like more or who will Trump fear more are not super helpful questions. What sort of government and what sort of policies can make the structural changes to America-proof Canada's economy and territorial integrity? That's a much longer term thing. And that's the sort of conversation that our politics is very badly designed to have, because you have to not be sure what the answer is. You have to speculate. You have to try things. And Ottawa for the last decade has been an announcement machine. It's not a place of democratic deliberation.
The rift here, I think, can't really be overstated. It goes beyond a fondness for a better record store. The role that America plays in the Canadian consciousness, we consume far more American culture than Canadian culture.
Yeah.
The relationship we have with America, I'm sure this was not understood by Trump, or nor did he care about it, but in this offhand joke that's become whatever the strategy is, the effect emotionally on Canadians, which is what makes it strange for me as it's forcing upon us both nationalism and our own isolationism, a look inward, and yet we still are locked into this media practice of defining everything through the lens of America. Like, looking at some headlines here, Toronto Star, Donald Trump looms large as Mark Carney triggers federal election campaign. Vancouver Sun, have Trump's threats changed the federal election picture in BC? You bet. CBC, this election is about Donald Trump. It goes on and on. Toronto Star, Canadian conservatives are desperate for Donald Trump to come to their rescue. It's all about America. It's all about Trump. I think that something has happened here. I'm going to try to get my head around this here. There has been a reordering of the political landscape here. think about this. The Canadian flag after the trucker convoy became coded as like a Trumpy thing. No left-leaning personality. Like it's like it became a dirty thing to have to wave a Canadian flag became associated with Trumpy Canadians. That's done. It's no longer something that people are embarrassed. Oh, it's going to make me look like a Trudeau guy to have a Canadian flag. Tons of coverage here. They're selling out of Canadian flags. Okay, that's just like a piece of the story. The stigma of Canadian patriotism is gone, and it is being felt across the board. So sure, people like on the left are reclaiming the flag. What's Carney's new slogan? Canada Strong. I had to blink because I was like, did he just put up Canada Proud? Like the messaging is indecipherable between the left and the right right now. And the right is with the left in opposition to Trump. Like even Trumpy Canadians who were with the trucker convoy, who listened to those podcasts, who are into that whole MAGA world, they may be with Trump on a lot of things. But I am not hearing them saying, take my sovereignty. I want to be the 51st state. There may be a few fringe exceptions to that. But for the most part, those Canadians are as rah-rah Canadians as ever. So now we've got Carney sloganeering Canada Strong. We've got Pierre Poilievre changing his colors from conservative blue to maple leaf red. I don't care if you are like a staunch Quebecois separatist or a rig pig in Fort Mac or like a hippie on Salt Spring Island or if you're like a latte-sipping downtown Toronto elite like myself. Every Canadian seems to be united in saying, fuck off America. I'm arriving at a question here, Paul. Has Donald Trump united Canada?
I think to a very great extent. I have to decide what I think about that. I mean, I would guard against the sort of forced, mandatory Team Canada reaction that was being expected in the early rounds among our politicians, that there was a counter-tariff list, you were a traitor if you disagreed with that response, and so on. I think the response has become a little bit looser and more realistic since then. I do admit I'm surprised that we haven't yet seen the rise of a quote-unquote realist current of thought in Canada that President Trump is not asking for anything unreasonable, Canada deserves it, and we should pay our tribute and say sorry and say thank you, and then we can get back to enjoying this fantastic trading relationship with a country that Trump is improving every day.
Kevin O'Leary came close to suggesting something like that, and he was almost ridden out of this country. Like, you know, that was it for him.
11 out of 10 Canadians would love to trade their Trudeau pesos for U.S. dollars. We know that already. So it's a very, very easy ride there.
I'm a little surprised that Kevin O'Leary doesn't have company, because there's always someone. I mean, my God, we've seen it in Ukraine. So what? Putin did a little invading, you know?
Yeah. But you're right. You're right. If I really made it my business to find somebody saying that, I could find somebody saying that. But that is not something that is percolating or getting any momentum as far as I can see.
Yeah. I can imagine a scenario where the Carney Trudeau liberals, as Poilievre calls them, manage to get reelected. And then that current rises in Alberta and Saskatchewan in reaction to another liberal victory, you know. But short of that, we haven't seen it happen. I had to explain this to a British friend. He understood not liking Trump, but he didn't understand why Canadians were sort of the mouse that roared over this. And I said, I don't usually take myself as representative of the broader population, but I think a lot of Canadians feel the same way I do. Not particularly anti-American at all. Very comfortable with sucking up every American cultural influence under the sun. Excited about visits to the United States and visits from American friends and so on. But no, not this, not anything close. F*** off. This will not stand and we will do whatever it takes to stop. It's fascinating to me that the first public figure to put words to that, with the possible exception of Charlie Angus, was Stephen Harper, who in my experience had never criticized a U.S. Republican ever.
I was probably the most pro-American prime minister in the history of our country. I view our relationship with the United States as one of Canada's great assets.
Before he became the, you know, we will spare any cost and embrace any indignity to stop the heathen at the door.
He said that if he was prime minister, that he would take any consequence to keep this a sovereign nation, including the, if Trump wants to impoverish us, we will still fight and be a sovereign nation.
It felt out of character for Harper, but I think he sort of gave the melody for what has followed.
I think that the anger and betrayal is in relation to how close we felt. It's because we were solicitous of American approval. It's because we enjoyed their culture so much. We feel so welcome there that it's so offside that I think it's stirred something very deep. It feels to me like a more profound shared sense of Canadianness than any other. Like, it ain't hockey. It ain't the tragically, like this is the thing that I think has made people feel more Canadian than anything else.
Yeah. And my only contribution is going to be to try to remind people that we're not upset at Americans.
Except for the fact that they voted for him. But
Yeah, but I don't think they voted for this.
That's true.
And they have a chance to pull him down from this insanity. And in the meantime, I'm not going to regret American movies, American writers, American thinkers, the metaphysical club of American philosophers. I'm not going to deny all those influences in horror just because the president of the United States has swiped the Putin invasion manual wholesale.
No, we're not going to go all freedom fries with it, but I do think that it's not going to disappear with a new trade deal, you know, because you know that it's possible now. You know that they can do this.
And we have the old trade deal. He's showing the world that his signature on a trade agreement is meaningless. So why should we value another signature on another agreement?
Paul, we're going to duly note some stories that our listeners really should pay attention to if they haven't heard them yet. What do you have to duly note today?
I'm just really happy that the consortium that organizes political debates in this country has finally given up the ridiculously elaborate model of 17 network anchors and a Toronto Star reporter that they used in the English language debates in 2019-2021. And instead they're going to a competent single moderator who's going to ask questions and do follow-ups and think for themselves. It's Steve Paikin for the English debate. It's Patrice Roy for the French debate. I have some history on this file.
Good evening. I'm Paul Wells, the political editor of Maclean's magazine. And I'm as surprised by all of this as you are. We've got the leaders of four national political parties together in one room.
I've always believed that single moderator is better than whatever complicated circus you could contrive, because the more complicated it is, the easier it is for a skillful candidate to get out of answering the question. They know there won't be follow-up. They know that if they dance for the next 6 minutes, they'll be safe on the other side of it. So finally acknowledging that debates are about the leaders and not about the show that the moderating team can put on is progress, and I'm glad to see it. I sent Steve Paikin a note, said, thank God.
It makes bad TV worse, you know. If there's already an issue with the debates that there's just too many people talking, there's no pace to the whole thing, everyone's just trying to cram in, get as much airtime as possible, and, you know, you kind of have to hear from candidates who are less relevant. To actually add to that, 3, 4, 5 media moderators. Like, why? It's just too many personalities to keep track of, and it just makes the thing just a really unpleasant experience. I have some memory that, how did you put it? A single competent moderator. There is some precedent.
Yeah. If you go back into the files, Rosie Abella, who was an Ontario court judge, mm-hmm. moderated one of the debates in 1988.
Really? I've never seen that.
Yeah.
A judge? Okay.
She hadn't even been elevated to the federal bench yet. She was doing family court in Toronto at the provincial level. But she was Rosie Abella. Everybody knew her. And honestly, it wasn't the most theatrical ninja debate champion thing. No, because it doesn't have to be. She asked some questions and then the leaders debated. It's actually not complicated. And it was a perfectly good debate. And to say the least, I think we've spent a decade absurdly overthinking these things. Find someone pretty smart. Have them ask questions.
It's been a reflection of internal media politics and who gets the stage. It's not about the viewer. Yeah, Steve will be good. You are good. You'd be good again.
Thank you.
Duly noted. I just want to duly note this horrifying, fascinating, bad crime story that's playing out in any other, news cycle. I think people will be wrapped and following every step of this. The Ryan Wedding story, this crime story, this former Olympic Canadian snowboarder who is now listed as one of the FBI's most wanted fugitives, facing federal charges related to 3 murders, a cocaine trafficking conspiracy, and leading a continuing criminal enterprise. This guy from Thunder Bay accused of running a $1 billion drug smuggling network. So there's some updates on this case. Really good piece of investigative work in The Star, talking to this poor young woman who was shot multiple times and survived. Her parents were murdered in front of her when they were misidentified by hitmen, allegedly sent by, allegedly, Ryan Wedding. Just chilling story. Remember one thing her dad told her the morning of his murder. The day your father will die, he'll tell himself, I love my daughter the most in this world, more than anybody else. That sounds like a father who knows he's about to get assassinated, but it turns out this was just a completely random misidentification of the parents. It's worth reading the story in The Star. other updates to this story, he is still alive and allegedly still active in the drug trade, according to the FBI. There is a $10 million reward for Ryan Wedding. In January, a key FBI witness in this case was killed. And, unsurprisingly, he's getting a new true crime docuseries from major North American producers with participation from a Toronto Star journalist, Calvi Leon, called Snow King, From Olympian to Narco.
I was always a serious young guy. I got my BA in political science. I always wanted to be a political reporter. I never had a lot of time for the crime reporters, but I'll tell you, it is the worst that people can be. It is always incredibly fascinating. And one of the enduring strengths of the Star is that they still recognize a f***ing good story and they throw everything they have at it. And this is a great example of that. Duly noted.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining me. Anything that you heard today, you can email me about it at jesse@canadaland.com, and I read all those emails. You can also find me posting about this and that on Blue Sky. Paul, where can people find you?
paulwells.substack.com.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins. Fact check by Sam Connert. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Go out.